as the drying facilities are built, as money comes in. Now, Pennsylvania, you know, they've unlimited permits, unlimited acreage, and that's the good thing. The bad thing is, are the big corporations going to come in and just be signing contracts left and right?
That's Steve Groff. You might know him as the cover crop coach. He's an expert in cover crops and soil health, and he works with farmers all over the country and all over the world. But he's from Lancaster County, and lately he has joined with a few other local farmers and business leaders to start a company called Keystone AgriScience. And as you may have guessed, the focus of Keystone AgriScience is industrial hemp. This is the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. My name is Eric Herlock. And on today's show, we talk with Steve Groff and one of the other partners at Keystone AgriScience, a greenhouse grower named Tim Good. Last week, I went out to their greenhouse, and they've got thousands of baby hemp plants in flats that are soon going to be transplanted into pots. This was an exciting field trip for me because I got to witness what is essentially the birth of the local hemp industry. And so as I was putting this podcast episode together, the weirdest thing happened. I was contacted by another man named Steve Groff.
So it's Steve Groff here.
Who was also involved in the birth of the hemp industry in Pennsylvania. A weird coincidence, yes, but still very exciting. So this other Steve Groff has a business in York, PA called Windridge Farm. Steve Groff and his family, they're getting into industrial hemp in a pretty big way.
We're going to be installing the first U.S. hemp train, which is a full fiber and biomass processing system for hemp. We're going to be first in the U.S. to have that machinery here in York.
So did you catch that? They are installing the very first hemp train in the United States. It's a whole plant processing machine. It's made by a Canadian company called Canadian Greenfields. We'll hear more about this on a future podcast. I just wanted to share this news with you because now we can start to watch the hemp fiber industry developing along with the CBD side of things. Okay, we'll take a quick break and listen to my interview with the guys from Keystone AgriScience. You may have noticed that our podcast is growing in popularity. Our audience is growing too. If you would like to reach our audience with your message, we have sponsorship opportunities available for you. So just get in touch. Send an email to podcast@lancasterfarming.com or call our sales rep, David Erickson, at 717-721-4435. Okay, back to the show. All right, so welcome to the Lancaster Farming Podcast. I'm here with, well, let's have you introduce yourself, Steve.
Well, Eric, it's great to be with you today. I'm Steve Groff, farmer from southern Lancaster County, and I also do a lot of cover crop coaching.
And then I'm Tim Good. I'm a local business leader with some background in greenhouse and nursery production, growing plants. So that's my background.
Okay, full disclosure here, Keystone AgriScience was a sponsor of this podcast, episode 22. Tell me about Keystone AgriScience. What is this business?
So Keystone AgriScience is a business focused on bringing industrial hemp to the Lancaster County area. Right now we're focused on high CBD hemp and growing that to produce oils, essential oils, which are used for mainly for medical purposes, and we're likely going to be interested in expanding that focus into some other areas of hemp production throughout our business life there.
So you're selling hemp seedlings to farmers, to local farmers?
We are. That's so we're starting out with growing small hemp seedlings. We're going to be selling them to local farmers, helping with consultation and helping them understand how to grow the seedlings into full plants, also helping with throughout the growing season with information, and then also on the back end in the fall, helping them with harvesting, processing, and information on that as well.
Okay, and this is all brand new. No one's really ever done this in the county, in the state.
Pretty much, it's, we're just basically starting at point zero and working up from there. So this is probably one of the first times that CBD, high CBD hemp is being grown in this area.
All right, so you guys got together, starting the business. Now what? What's sort of like the business model?
Well, our business model, so there's two really big challenges to getting started in industrial hemp. I would say one is knowledge. Like there just really isn't enough knowledge around on how to grow it. And the other is genetics. So that's the two really big hurdles to starting an industrial hemp business. So first of all, working with genetics, we spent some time finding some really great genetics to be able to produce a very good CBD oil crop. And then also finding someone with the knowledge on how to grow that crop. So those were two of our biggest challenges starting with this business. So once we had those figured out, it was quite a bit easier. So our business model is basically we're going to be growing quite a few small starter plants in our greenhouses, and we're going to be sending them out to some Amish farmers. A lot of them are Amish farmers with produce background that would have grown produce in the past. It's a similar crop to a lot, maybe think something similar to growing tomatoes or something like that. So we ship them out to our farming partners. They grow them in their fields, and then we help with production on the back end, harvesting, drying, and then finding extraction places that would be used to extract the CBD oil from the crop.
Okay, so you're working with farmers as partners, not so much as, you know, customers?
We actually have two groups of farmers. There's one group that we're actually providing a guaranteed level of income to, where we're actually basically funding their crop. Okay. And then there's a second group which are funding their own crop, and they're buying the seedlings from us, and then it's their own crop the whole way through.
Okay. We were talking before the podcast started about, you know, farmers asking you lots of questions, like they want to know, is it a scam? What do you say to them?
Well, I'll just say right up front, there is some scams out there. There is some misinformation. There's some wild claims. And, you know, if you will, it's kind of like the Wild West. It's kind of like the Gold Rush. And then, of course, this area, people know about years ago, the artichoke thing that came through.
The Jerusalem artichoke?
Jerusalem artichokes. Yeah, that's a bad memory.
Can you tell that story real quick?
Well, I was young enough that I don't recall all the details, but I'm thinking that was 30 years ago. I'm not sure, early 80s, and I'm guessing here. And there was, you plant this miracle crop of Jerusalem artichokes, and it's going to do... It's so good, it's healthy for you. And, you know, basically it came to be that there was really no market for it. And so what happens with things like that is sometimes the most desperate farmers will sign up for it to hopefully get them over a financial crisis. And it just made things worse. It really never happened. It never worked out. So we have that in our memories, and we need to remember some of this stuff. So there's going to definitely be some people who are probably going to lose money. I just read an article that came out actually in the Farm Journal, which is a national publication, cover story on the opportunity of hemp. But one farmer lost $200,000 of expected value because the seeds he got had a lot of male plants mixed in, and he didn't know that he should take them out. They pollinated the female plants, took the CBD down to unmarketable levels. So he was out, he wasn't out $200,000, but he expected $200,000, didn't get a penny, didn't get anything for his crop, but he's going to do it again this year because he learned.
Right, it's an education issue.
It certainly is. So what we like to tell people is don't grow any more than you can afford to lose. Now that's with anybody. Now, At Keystone AgriScience, we have made a valiant effort to get the right genetics, and that's the key. But you know, we're going to have to learn how to grow them here in Lancaster County. There's not been any experience of any amount. How do these genetics function in our climate here? Last year was a very wet season. You know, can we use genetics that come from a different area of the country? That will they perform here? We will have to check that out. That's part of what I'm doing.
And that's a risk that you're taking this year, right?
And I would say everybody is. I think we need to be clear about that. So getting the right genetics is really, really important. Knowing the people, there are going to be some people coming in here from out of the area that, yeah, they may know their stuff, but do you trust them? Can you trust them? And this is going to have to be some companies, some individuals, they have to be experienced to understand if they really can carry through. Eventually, the cream will rise to the top. But I think this opportunity is for those who are very astute and learning. Because we don't have a prescription that we have said that this is what we've learned after 3 years and this is the way you do it in Lancaster County. I think it needs to be clear with that up front. In a way, we're in this together, and I'm saying all the farmers. But what I am trying to do with Keystone AgriScience, because of the connections that we have, the history that we have with some of our partners here that actually have some experience, and the connections we have with others, people that we trust, we're trying to get us out of the gate in the best chance possible, I guess is the way I would describe it. So
I think you have an advantage because you're all sort of from the community already. It's not like you're coming in from outside. You're sort of growing up in the,
right.
the farming
here.
Community of Lancaster.
We live here. Yeah. We do business here. Part of my part of what I bring to the table is I have national connections. And it's interesting. What I'm finding out is the people that I have been involved with in the cover crop business, even in Oregon, people that I've worked directly with, even seed breeders I work with in Oregon are now doing hemp. These are people I trust because I have done business with them for years. So it legitimizes this as not being the Jerusalem artichoke. I'm big name people that I personally know, growers, seed growers. So that gives me the confidence to move forward. But I see Keystone AgriScience as leading the at least the growing part of it here in Lancaster County, in a way that farmers will respect. Do we have all the answers? No. But we're connected, and I think that is what sets us apart, maybe.
What kinds of questions are you hearing from farmers, or what kind of fears do they have?
Well, I think the biggest fear is, are they going to invest thousands of dollars in a crop and then have no sale for it? And that's a legitimate concern, because we don't have the infrastructure really in place yet. And I don't know, Tim, if you want to go into that a little bit, but that's coming. But as of this day, there's not a lot of infrastructure in place. We're headed that way. But
so you mean like planting equipment, harvesting equipment, and then processing stuff?
Yeah, and also knowing for sure that there's an end market for what they're producing. So just to recap with what Steve was saying there, the two biggest hurdles, if my message to farmers is, whatever you do, make sure you have the right genetics. If you don't have the right genetics, you failed before you started. If you produce a crop which has a CBD percentage of like 3 or 4%, there's really not a really great market for that.
What's an ideal percentage?
An ideal percentage would be somewhere between 12 and 18% would be an ideal if you had raised a very good crop under good conditions with good genetics. So, and also spend some time learning. So that farmer that you talked about that had lost $200,000 of expected revenue, that's basically a knowledge-based problem there, you know. And if he had a consultant or somebody that had been able to tell him that ahead of time, it would have been such a huge difference for his crop for that year. So if my message to farmers is make sure you spend some time learning about this crop, talk to people, ask questions, and make sure you get good genetics. Those two things are just so important. Now our genetics, we're actually distributing Chimney Rocks brand seeds, and that's what we're growing into seedlings for our production.
Now, who is Chimney Rock and how did you find them?
Chimney Rock is an industrial hemp breeder that actually works on, he's located in Colorado. Our connection to him was through Zane, who's part of our Keystone AgriScience, and I actually, me and Zane, flew out to Colorado and met with Chimney Rock, met with some of their men, and actually toured their facility. So they're researching different genetics and working at being able to have high CBD content while still having low enough THC content. So another really important thing with genetics is not only having that high CBD content, but also having a plant which is going to keep the THC level below 0.3% long enough so that you can harvest it with a good crop. Because a lot of these plants, even the ones we're growing, if they were grown long enough, could possibly run over the legal limit of 0.3% THC, in which case you would have an illegal crop. It would be considered marijuana.
THC is sort of like response to the environment, like it sort of grows in the plant based on environmental conditions, is that right?
It does, especially a plant that's under a lot of stress. If you would have some plants that had gone through some drought conditions or had gone through some stress, that would encourage the THC to rise much faster than it would otherwise. So taking really good care of your plants and actually sort of babying them is almost a must to be able to keep that THC from running up too high. And then even if they're grown for too long, if you don't harvest soon enough, your THC will eventually run over that 0.3% late in the season. So it's important to test for the THC and do testing to decide when your harvest time is so that you can harvest before that THC runs too high.
And Tim, that's just a great point I want to reemphasize. You can have all the right genetics that we can provide, but the farmer has a responsibility to harvest on I'm going to say the day or the week that it's ready for harvest. So if farmers plant this stuff and expect miracles, it's not going to happen. You have to manage them well. He alluded to if it gets dry. We're saying you better have drip irrigation or some irrigation there so you don't put yourself in that corner, because the best genetics can maybe fail you if they're not taken care of correctly and harvested at the correct time. And that's pretty much within a 1 week window. And, you know, sometimes I'll just give the example. Farmers know this. If there is, you know, like last fall, we have a week of rainy weather predicted. You got to get your crop harvested. You got to get it in, or you may risk losing it all. And these are some of the cautions that I think we need to put out there before people sign up, so to speak, so they understand that this is a high risk, high reward, but highly managed. And I'm concerned that some farmers who are desperate, you have to ask the question, why are they desperate? And again, there's circumstances out there now. Sometimes it's because they never were very good managers. So you have to be a good manager if you're going to want to expect some of these returns that are possible out there.
Can we talk about the harvest? So for CBD harvesting, it's very manual labor, right? Almost like tobacco?
It is very similar to tobacco. So harvest involves going out, cutting off the plants at the very base, cutting the entire plant off, and bringing it in to the farm, at which time it's you need to dry it. So there's a couple different ways that drying can be done. It can be hung up with like fans and dehumidifiers, and it will dry naturally by itself, or it can go through a drying processor, in which case you would first of all strip it down, remove the main stalk, and then run it through a drying machine. Okay. You can hang it, you can dry it, or you can run it through a drying processor. And that drying processor, you try to work it down to about 30% moisture.
Okay. And what, you bale it up and send it to a processor? What happens
after
that
it's
point?
Dried down? You can bale it up. You can either sell. Some people are interested in buying raw materials, so there's some people that are making their own oils, like small batch oils. There's some people who are looking for raw product for other things. There's also, you could sell it to an extraction processor, which they would just buy basically your dried down product and then extract the oil themselves.
I would just follow up on the moisture, because there's, as I understand, there's some variance in what target moisture is, depending what the end product is, depending what the storability is. If you need to compress it, bale it, so to speak, it does need to get down to like 15% or so at a mold.
Okay.
Kind of like hay.
Okay.
So it depends how you store it. You can store 30% on a more loose basis, but if you're going to compact it, it got to be drier than that or to mold.
And there's no chance of damaging it if it's compacted or anything?
Well, again, it comes back to what your final product is. And there's... I mean, literally, there's 1,000 different products. I mean, you could argue that. And this is where it gets in the details of you know, who you're growing it for, and so forth. So that's where, as this market matures, we're going to see all different kinds of various ways that people actually handle it. And you could argue it starts with the genetics, what's your end market, and then how do you take care of that to your end market? Because there will be, you know, large companies developing out of this that'll produce mass quantities of low-level CBDs. Then there's going to be the niche markets that are going to be much more specific.
So what can farmers be doing now to avoid getting the short end of the stick as this industry develops?
Well, I think it's, you have to go with people that you trust and do your homework. But frankly, there's not a lot of readily available information for commercial scale growing yet. It's coming. But when I tell people they gotta learn all they can, well, there's not a lot out there. There's not a lot of books you can read or download or whatever yet. And that's the stage we're at. And so I talk to some farmers and they'll say, you know what? You guys figure it out. I'll be here next year for you. And in a way, that's wise for you to do. Or just start with a few plants, jump in the game, and it literally is one of those things for the people who are bent more for pioneering, for more innovation. They're the people who will figure it out because they have an astute knowledge and ability to be able to place a high value on managing it, watching it all the time and learning and so forth. My concern, again, going back, is for the farmer who's desperate and thinks he can just put these stuff in the ground and collect a check at the end of the year. It's not going to happen. If that's what you're thinking, you might as well not go this route. It will take management to do that. We don't even know what all that is yet.
Should farmers be in competition with one another, or should they be working together here in this?
They should definitely be working together on this. I would hate to see any farmer try to start at point zero and work his way through this by himself. And just to echo Steve's point, this is not easy money. This is hard money. This is going to take some work. It's going to take some cooperation. It's usually best to start small if you're interested in doing anything this year.
Right now, and this kind of is another question to you, I didn't really finish that you asked about, you know, is this going to end up with a small market and all of a sudden it's going to be flooded? Don't think so. And the reason is all of the hemp products, not just CBD oil, there are literally thousands of uses. But just looking at the CBD part, which is what we're mainly talking about now, the dynamic that is important to understand is CBDs can be used by every human being. They can be used by almost all the animals, including the ones that we are farming now in agriculture. Cows, chickens, pigs. I've heard beef. I've heard they're working at it, basically supplementing cattle feed with CBD products. CBD products.
I think you'll see the CBD market come down, but then the fiber and oil market will come
up, right? That's typically
what
I'm hearing. I mean, I think it's pretty much, you might as well consider that the CBD market will come down. How and when, nobody really knows. But as the infrastructure is built, as the drying facilities are built, as money comes in, now Pennsylvania, you know, they've unlimited permits, unlimited acreage. You know, that's maybe good and bad. Cause
it's like a green light to industry, come here.
Yeah. Right, and that's the good thing. The bad thing is, are the big corporations going to come in and just be signing contracts left and right? Don't know, but I think we can expect that.
So I talked to a research scientist from Ford Motor Company a couple months ago, and she's like, we can't wait to get our hands on a huge quantity of hemp because we can make everything out of it. And they just haven't had that supply. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot you can do with it.
Yeah. So that's why I think the potential here is way beyond any other thing that turned out to be kind of a flash in the pan. And that's why I'm investing time in it myself, because I really see this is a way to help farmers. To help farmers give an alternative crop, alternative cash flow, to make agriculture strong again.
How important are organic growing practices in this?
So organic growing practices are quite important. Right now, a lot of extractors that are looking for very high quality crops are going to be testing for the existence of pesticides and herbicides at the time of extraction. So having an organic practice is very, very important. As of right now, most CBD oil is not FDA approved as of right now, and so they can't be completely labeled as certified organic, grown on certified organic ground. That will likely happen later on, but certainly having organic practice and not using a lot of chemical herbicides and pesticides is very important.
I would just add, Eric, that for what I am going to do on my farm is not organic. I mean, you can argue a lot of things I do are certainly organic friendly, organic minded, especially with the cover crops and so forth. What I'm going to attempt to do this year is to grow the crop without the use of any synthetic chemistry. Anything that I use would be organically approved. So that's going to be a new territory for me. I've worked around this for a while with my cover crops, but I feel like I have some options to try and plan. And because this is a food product we're growing, and it's one thing to, you know, to grow a crop in a an environmentally friendly way. There's a market here, and the market, I'm talking about the people we sell to, they are wanting things that are grown in some soil health way, some regenerative agricultural way. That's way more comprehensive than just the CBD. We're talking about the way we grow food and everything. And that's an area I'm very familiar with and what I do with promoting cover crops.
Okay.
And soil health and everything. I mean, you can just see it coming where large corporations now, like General Mills, is putting a lot of money into soil health research and stuff. And I just use that as an example, is we now have a kind of in a parallel way, a renewed emphasis on growing our food, growing our products in a way that has a soil health component. And this fits right into that.
Well, let's talk about that. So I've heard conflicting reports on what hemp does to the soil. Some people are like, oh, it's great. It's like regenerative. You can use it to like remediate mm-hmm. coal fields, whatever. And then I've heard other people saying, oh, it destroys the soil. So you're the soil guy. What's the deal?
Well, I'll answer it this way. Everything needs to be managed according to, from a soil health standpoint. So if you plant hemp every year in the same field, not a good idea. Now, there's ways that you can mitigate if you have a very small acreage. And again, I'm going to put a plug in for cover crops. If you grow cover crops very intensively along with or in the off season of hemp production, you're gonna mitigate some of that. But if you're tilling your soil every year, you're laying plastic every year, and you know you just go hemp, you know, eventually you're gonna start to degrade that soil unless you put a lot of amendments on, and you know, we could go different ways there. But in the context of a crop rotation, it is a different crop. So the crop rotational effect, or the diversity effect that we know works so well, it's just mimicking nature, is all it does. In that context, the hemp is, I think, would solidly stand behind. It's good for the soil from the crop rotation. But if you abuse it, you know, it eventually wears out the soil. It's like corn on corn on corn on corn. You know, you can still do that, but it takes more and more inputs. And that's, we're trying to mimic nature. And I think, especially this, the whole hemp, the CBD, it fits in to the paradigm of regenerative agriculture very well.
Do you think you'll see an influx of new farmers getting into agriculture?
I wouldn't say it's going to be a major, you know, movement in that regard. I think it'll be a significant movement. The degree, I'm not sure, but I will tell you this, that the newer farmers will tend to be more open to this as far as the quality component. You got the millennials out there, they get it. And they want to know where their food was grown. They want to know the transparency of it and where it was grown, how it was handled through the chain of supply. And now with technology, we can do that. We can follow that. We can trace it. And that's where I think this whole quality thing is going to be a bigger player. So, yes, definitely some people coming in. And I would say, you know, if you're a a young entrepreneur, young farmer, this could be an opportunity here with the CBDs. But then again, can you back up, you know, a potential, like what if it doesn't work out? What if your THC is over? What if we have a bad growing year? I mean, that's farming. We have good years, we have bad years. The same thing is going to happen in CBD production. Because regardless of how we manage, you know, the weather is going to be the final say a lot of times.
So you talk about millennials. I feel like millennials as consumers, like at some point, they're going to demand that all of the products be way more sustainably grown and made and capture carbon. And I think industrial hemp is going to play a big role in that. Because, you know, you buy something at the store, it's in a box, it's wrapped in plastic. Well, the box and the plastic could be made from industrial hemp.
Sure.
The item itself, you know, like my cell phone could probably be made out of hemp. So I think at some point people who are thinking about the environment and maybe climate change and all that, they're going to demand, and there's going to be a shift, and industry is going to have to respond.
And that's another reason, you just listed a bunch more reasons why I think it's not going to be flash in the pan. There's so many uses for this. So many uses that... And I imagine our path is going to take twists and turns. And it's, you know, we may in 2 years, 5 years, we may not be sitting here talking about CBDs. We may be talking about hempcrete. We may be talking about other aspects of this. You know, our Declaration of Independence of this country is written on hemp paper. I have heard from legitimate sources that the paper companies don't necessarily see this as a threat right now to the pulp industry, because they see the ability to infuse hemp fibers, hemp pulp into papers, make a quality paper. Not only that, it's a marketing appeal.
Right. Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to buy hemp paper as long as it's not, you know, like way overly priced or something.
Right.
You know, so, you know, there's so many good stories about this that has value from a marketing perspective.
We didn't really touch on the dairy crisis. How does this tie into the dairy crisis?
Well, I will just say that the dairy crisis is real. I was in Wisconsin 2 weeks ago, and it's just as gloomy there as it is here in Lancaster County. And part of me is feeling that's just so unfortunate. Because, you know, I have dairy farmers all around me. I grow hay, I grow corn for my dairy farming neighbors, and they are struggling to pay. It's legitimate. There's farms being sold every week now in Lancaster County, dairy farms. And so the crisis is real. There is no light at the end of the tunnel, but eventually it will correct. But not near everybody is going to be able to survive through this. And so I think the dairy industry will be changed forever. And I hate to say that, but I don't want to sugarcoat it. So the dairy farmers are going to have to seriously look at a potential, you could almost argue, career shift in agriculture. And that's part of the reason why Keystone AgriScience was formed. Actually, that's probably the main reason it was formed, is to give dairy farmers an opportunity to have a second chance. Now, for some of them, it could be just to support the industry that they love. They love getting up at 4 a.m. and milking cows, and getting out and doing that, and the whole cultural aspect of it. So for some, it will carry them through, because I do think it'll correct itself eventually, but it's not anytime soon. For others, this could bring new life into their farming operation. And so I think, simply put, this is an opportunity, but as we said, you know, in this whole interview here, it's gonna take management. And you don't just go out and plant a few hemp plants and expect to cash a check at the bank.
And just to build on that, Steve, just last week I was doing my taxes and I was at my accountant's office. And so she does accounting for a lot of local farmers, a lot of dairy farmers. And she said, you wouldn't believe how many farmers are coming in here to do their taxes, and they're sitting in my chair, in my office chair here, and they're sobbing. Yep. She said, I've seen checks coming from selling milk cows one after the next, and the price is dirt cheap. They're selling out, they're giving up. It's just one after the next. She said there's quite a few, like, Amish farmers who, one, she said, I'm further behind now. He said, I was actually going to the bank and borrowing money to feed my children. I mean, that's where it's dire. This dairy problem, it's not very good, and it doesn't look like it's getting better anytime soon. And if what we do here with hemp, even we were talking earlier about being able to bring new farmers in, if all we do here is save our existing farms, I'll be happy. You know, if we can give them a source of good, solid revenue, somewhere to go to save those family farms, I'm happy.
Yeah, because farming, as we know, is not just an occupation, it's a whole lifestyle.
It is.
And this is an anecdote here, but one of the local farmers that I was talking to that lives down the road from me, he took 20 calves to the auction, to New Holland auction, the livestock auction, and I think he got, was it 50 cents a piece? So $10, you know, for 20 calves. So the problems are real. It's pretty tough out there.
Yeah. Well, we can't end it on that sad of a note, right? Let's get back to industrial hemp somehow. What do you think, Steve? Some final words?
I think this is a legitimate opportunity. I'm committed to learning all I can to be able to help farmers. And I expect there to be somewhat of a rocky road, but also somewhat of a glorious sunset, if you will. I think it's there. I wouldn't waste my time. With careful management, clear objectives in mind, working with the right people, with a kind of an entrepreneurial pioneering attitude, I think I'm committed to figuring it out. I'll just say that. And my desire is, you know, for my own farm and also to help other farmers. That's really what my heart is. I want to be able to help other farmers to get this right. You know, it's a journey. There's no doubt about it. We're not thinking this is going to be, you know, some sort of, you know, miracle. We understand that we are taking a, somewhat of a risk in a way, but also the reward is out there that we're going to go for it. So that's what our plan is.
The other thing I want to say is that I think God has blessed us with this hemp opportunity right now. So with our farms struggling, with them in decline, what a great time for the best new opportunity in agriculture, I would say, in my lifetime. So here it comes, the best opportunity ever for agriculture, just at the time the farmers are struggling. And I can't help but think that God must have been looking out for his farmers, looking out for his people. So I'd like to just thank him for that opportunity.
Yeah, well, guys, I know you probably have a lot of work to do today, and I appreciate you taking time to talk with me.
Well, thank you, Eric, for what you're doing for this whole industry with your podcast, and I appreciate that. I think it's going to be helpful, and to keep up your good work. You keep interviewing other people, and we're in this together as a whole community. So you're a part of that as well. So welcome to the club.
He's right, you know. We're all in this together. You're part of that club too. Thank you for listening to today's show. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@lancasterfarming.com. My name is Eric Herlock, digital editor at Lancaster Farming. And until next time, I'll see you in the newspaper. So, it's occurred to me that maybe I should be putting some credits on this show, production credits and whatnot. So first off, this podcast is copyright Lancaster Farming 2019. Lancaster Farming is a division of Steinman Communications. Today's show was written and recorded and edited and produced by Eric Herlock, me. Thank you for listening. All of the music, including the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp podcast theme song, are courtesy of Tin Bird Shadow. And also today we had a little bit of the Twilight Zone, so thank you to the North American Pops Orchestra for that version. I'm just going to let the music play out. Feel free to stop here or listen to the end.